Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver. A huge speech last night from Senator Hillary Clinton. And now, the biggest looms, Barack Obama, tomorrow night, Invesco Stadium. We are a day away from a moment in American history, African-American history, that many thought they might never live to see. We talked with convention delegate Jane Ragland from Chillicothe, Ohio. She had a stroke in May, but nothing was stopping her from being here in Denver to see the formal nomination of a major American party's first black presidential nominee.
I'm overwhelmed, and I hope he is elected president because I think he is a good person. I think he's a chosen person.
And there was Evelyn Bullock from Rocky Mount, North Carolina, one of a wave of African Americans who have made this as racially diverse a convention as there's ever been.
I think now it is time that we put people in office not based on the color of their skin, but based on their abilities and what they stand for.
This hour, On Point, African-American writers Maya Angelou, Alice Walker, and Ishmael Reed on Barack Obama's nomination and its meaning for America. You can join the conversation. What does Obama's nomination, his life, his rise, his color, his challenge ahead mean for black America, for all America? What do you make of this moment in America's history, its race history? We will speak in just a moment with Dr. Maya Angelou and Alice Walker, two of the country's leading literary voices, and later this hour with leading essayist Ishmael Reed. But first, to look at last night's speech from Hillary Clinton, we're joined in Denver by Gwen Ifill, host of Washington Week from PBS and senior correspondent for the NewsHour. She's author of the forthcoming book, The Breakthrough: Politics in the Age of Obama. Gwen, it's great to have you.
Good morning, Tom.
How about that Hillary Clinton speech last night? What did you make of it? And do you think it did the necessary, however one might define that, here in Denver?
There are people who are always going to find that Hillary Clinton falls short or look at the Clintons and lift an eyebrow. But I think last night she knew what she had to accomplish. She had to leave no room for people to say she wasn't a full-throated supporter of Barack Obama. And she did. It was a very interestingly choreographed speech in the hall when she first stepped out there in that bright orange suit. Mm-hmm. People held up Hillary signs. And then
all over the hall.
Mm-hmm. A carpet of them. And then it turned. And you could see all the little floor whips running around and passing out these long, cylindrical Obama signs that said unity on one side,
yes,
Obama on the other. And so that by the time she began to cheer in earnest, they began to cheer in earnest through the speech, everything had been transformed. It was really quite a sight.
Nothing accidental in the stagecraft.
Well, right? Never at a convention. No.
And the message itself, do you think it was strong enough, heartfelt enough, delivered in a manner to turn her most devoted delegates wholeheartedly toward Barack Obama?
There are people who will never, ever vote for Barack Obama who just for some reason they really were trying to figure a way to make these two thoughts come together in their heads, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. But I talked to a woman last night after the convention who said, you know, it is possible to hold in your head a complete disappointment that you didn't live to see the first woman president. This was an older woman. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, still support Barack Obama. They seem like clashing ideals, but it is possible to do that. That's what Hillary Clinton was telling her supporters to do, that you can still love me. Who knows? I may be running for president
mm-hmm.
again.
And the video before certainly had the feeling
it
of one more campaign
did.
Video.
And all those Hillary signs had her
yes.
website on it.
Yes.
So nothing was left to chance.
Right.
On the other hand, her point and her goal last night, and I think will be Bill Clinton's tonight, is to say, but what's your option here? You do not want four more years of a Republican leadership, and so you need to get on board.
And her fundamental point, it seemed to me, and a hard one for a politician to make, were you voting for me, were you supporting me, or were you supporting what I stood for, and then graciously handing that to Barack Obama?
I actually think that was the key line in the speech. That's when she had to tell people, get out of your heads here. This is not about me. Something, frankly, she really has not said before. Neither she nor her husband want to miss this moment in history. One of the things that made Bill Clinton the unhappiest about the way the campaign unfolded for them is that he felt he had been dubbed a racist, and he thought that was really unfair. So they see the train is leaving the station for a history-making moment, and the worst thing for them would be to look like they're standing on the sidelines with their arms folded.
We'll hear more about Bill Clinton later in this day. What about the Obama camp? Have you heard how their response to Hillary? Hillary's speech last night?
They are thrilled. Apparently, Barack Obama called not only Hillary Clinton, but Bill Clinton after the speech last night and told them he was proud of that they delivered, that he was happy about it. It was interesting. They were not seated together, Michelle Obama and Joe Biden, with Bill Clinton. He was seated in another part of the hall with some of his closest and kind of the most bitter Hillary hangers-on.
The Klan,
yes. But as a C-L-A-N, just so he doesn't get upset.
Yes.
But still, you didn't see them interact in that way, but I think you will.
Gwen, you cover all aspects of this convention, and you're writing about race in your book coming out, and Obama. Mm-hmm. As an African-American reporter who's covered all kinds of things, this is a moment for this whole country and for African-Americans. How do you look at the race piece of what is going on here? What will transpire in this week with this formal nomination of Barack Obama?
I became a journalist so I could witness moments like this. Mm-hmm. I'm also the daughter of a man who moved to this country, participated in civil rights marches when I was growing up, and felt very much that his children should benefit from the things that he decided to fight for. So it is impossible for me to separate out my observer status from my, you know, chills up my arm status that I imagine if my father was still alive, he'd be enjoying this moment. I find it actually surprisingly easy, however, then to step into the other piece, which looks at this guy analytically and says, mm-hmm. can he be a good president? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't take away from just the history-making moment of it all, mostly because I talk to people all the time, to voters all the time, who say, I never thought I'd live to see this day. You can't dismiss that emotion.
You really cannot this week. Gwen Ifill of PBS, it's great to have you with us. We look forward to your book, The Breakthrough, coming out next month. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. Terrific.
There has been a lot said already in this week. Let's listen to just a little bit and then hear from something earlier from one of our guests today. First, in his convention speech on Monday, Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr., Democrat of Illinois, put Barack Obama's nomination in the context of the Civil War and highlights of the civil rights marches.
So it was at Appomattox. So it was in Selma, Alabama. Tonight, I would add, and so it shall be in Denver, Colorado, with the nomination of Barack Obama to be President of the United States of America.
And Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. said Martin Luther King would be proud of how far America has come.
I'm sure that Dr. King is looking down on us here in Denver, noting this is the first political convention in history to take place within sight of a mountaintop.
Of a mountaintop, says Jesse Jackson Jr. Let's look back to another presidential moment, January 20th, 1993. Here's Maya Angelou, who we'll hear from in just a moment, reading On the Pulse of Morning at the presidential inauguration of Bill Clinton. This is a poem written at his request, one of only two poets ever to read at a presidential inauguration. Here's an excerpt of Dr. Angelou reading from her poem on that day.
Here, on the pulse of this new day, you may have the grace to look up and out and into your sister's eyes and into your brother's face, your country, and say simply, very simply, with hope, good morning.
On the Capitol steps, 1993, the inauguration of Bill Clinton. Joining me now from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, is Dr. Maya Angelou, one of America's most renowned poets and authors. She is one of two poets in U.S. history, herself and Robert Frost, to read at a presidential inauguration. She was an early and strong supporter of Senator Hillary Clinton's candidacy. She's a professor of American Studies at Wake Forest University and author of numerous books, including I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. Her latest book is out September 23rd. It's called Letters to My Daughter. Dr. Maya Angelou, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Tom Ashfield.
It's wonderful to have you. I'm sure you were watching very closely last night as Hillary Clinton spoke. You
Absolutely.
Have been a longtime friend and supporter. What did you think of her address?
I was so pleased. And not surprised, but proud as if she was my daughter. I just think that she was spot on explaining her attitude and her belief in Senator Obama. Also, she was smart enough to have some and had enough political savvy to give us a rallying cry. No way, no how, no McCain. That is going to be, I believe, as solidly used as I like Ike.
You're a literary great who thinks like a political operative. But let me ask you, Dr. Angelou, you were really a strong supporter of Hillary Clinton. And, of course, that speech was intended in part to turn supporters, maybe supporters like you, to Barack Obama. What about yourself, personally? Will you now turned wholeheartedly to the Obama candidacy or not?
I turned wholeheartedly when Mrs. Clinton and Senator Clinton stepped.
Sounds like we have a little trouble with our line to North Carolina there. I'm sure we'll have Dr. Maya Angelou back with us in just a moment. She was very close to Hillary Clinton, and let me share just a little bit of a poem that she read for her earlier to give you a sense of the journey that she's made here. State package for Hillary Clinton. You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may tread me in the very dirt, but still, like dust, I rise. That poem that Maya Angelou wrote went on to say, "Don't give up on Hillary. Rise, Hillary, rise." She says last night, Hillary Clinton passed the torch effectively to Barack Obama. We will hear more from her and from Alice Walker and from great essayist Ishmael Reed in just a few seconds after a short break here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point live from Denver and the Democratic National Convention, talking this hour with African-American writers about the Obama candidacy and its cultural significance for this country. We've been talking with Dr. Maya Angelou. She joined us from North Carolina. Thunderstorm there has got her line clipped for just a moment. We hope to have her back with us soon. Joining me now from Mendocino, California, Alice Walker, Pulitzer Prize-winning author, one of America's leading literary voices. Her poetry, essays, and fiction are some of the treasures of American literature. Her iconic work is the 1983 The Color Purple. Alice Walker, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you. And with us from San Francisco, Ishmael Reed, well-known author, poet, and essayist whose cultural criticism has appeared in the New York Times, Baltimore Sun, San Francisco Chronicle, all over. He's author of Mixing It Up, Taking on the Media Bullies, and Other Reflections, which is just out. Ishmael Reed, wonderful to have you as well. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
Alice Walker, first to you, if I may. How do you describe the significance of the Barack Obama phenomenon?
Well, I remember being at the March on Washington in 1963 and Martin Luther King Jr. telling us to go back to the South, to go back to where we came from and work from there. And it was a long vision. It was a long vision that we could change the world and change at least Mississippi at that time for me. So I see this as a part of that long struggle to bring the people that we love so much into the light. And they've been missing there, and we've needed to see them. We need to see those faces. We need to see Obama, and we need to see Michelle. And so it's a very good thing, I think.
How much success does it signify to you? Is it? I don't know what the right word is. Game changing. Does it mean we're in a post-racial era? Is it just a way station on a still longer path? How do you look at it across a range of time and progress?
It's always on the way to becoming. We're just starting, really. Look at the planet. It's a mess. And all of us have to think of ourselves as being elected to change this, not just Obama. We're very happy to see him because he is so smart and he has a good heart. But it's up to all of us to change this disaster that we call modern life.
Ishmael Reed, there are so many terms we could look at this, but in racial terms, and many, you know, some people would say, let's be done with that. But never mind. We've got American history staring us in the face still. In racial terms, what do you make of this formal nomination that we'll see tomorrow night and the rise of Barack Obama?
I think that there's such a euphoria surrounding this candidate that people are not examining his policies, which sound like the third term of Bill Clinton. We talked about ecology. Alice mentioned ecology. This guy's come out for offshore drilling. Wiretapping, welfare reform, I mean, which has made millions of women destitute, men and women destitute. He couldn't get to Tavis Smiley's forum, but he went to AIPAC and got so carried away that he promised an undivided Jerusalem. He's advocated the invasion of Pakistan, and I just read this morning that the United Nations has accused the American Air Force of murdering 90 more Afghanistan civilians. So, the guy is moving so far to the right, I think he might be to the right of Bush after it's all over.
In policy terms, then, we hear you standing up pretty four square in opposition to a lot of what Barack Obama has to say. What about in racial terms, his place in American history, what it means for American
culture?
Well,
I admire him. I was watching local news the other night, and all the stories about black men and Hispanic men were crime stories, and then there was Obama. So I think he provides a role model to millions of children, whichever racial background or ethnic background they come from. So I think that's of symbolic importance. But I think the Clintons have jeopardized his chances of being elected with their shenanigans and carrying on at the convention there. I read Maureen Dowd's column this morning in the paper, and it said Mrs. Clinton made a speech last night which sounded like her opening campaign speech for the next election. She's behind the scenes egging on these feminist deep enders into embarrassing Obama. And I heard on Amy Goodman's show this morning that they plan to do some kind of roll call vote or to do some kind of breakfast vote to embarrass the candidate.
At the same time, there was a pretty big passing of the torch last night. Alice Walker, we saw Michelle Obama speaking earlier this week. Barack Obama will speak tomorrow. In those faces of the delegates in the convention hall, never mind all over America, but in those faces, white and black, as they looked up at Michelle Obama, who would be the first African-American first lady of this country, what did you see in those faces if you were watching, Alice Walker?
You know, I have to say I must be the only person in the world who doesn't have television, but I did read all the speeches. And I think that the speeches are wonderful, and I think that they reflect the optimism of people who intend to work very hard. None of this will change if we don't just decide that we are going to work as hard as we can to change the global situation, not just the American one. And so I think that just to see a whole different look will help us immensely. We are so tired of seeing people who are tied to the old regimes going all the way back to, you know, what they consider the founding of the country, you know, ignoring that there were people already here, of course. I think it's a very different thing to have people leading us who can actually listen to us. And I believe that Obama, I don't know very much about Biden, but I think we might have people who can listen for a change, and that would be refreshing in itself.
Do you think that Barack Obama's racial parentage makes a difference in terms of that ability?
Oh, I do. I think it's a wonderful thing. I think that people should be mixed. I think they should be, you know, as we almost all of us are anyway. It's just a recognition of that. And to dig into the richness that we have because we are more than one thing and we come from more than one place is actually fabulous. It's not in any way a detriment unless people moan and groan about it.
Maya Angelou joins us again from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Dr. Angelou, I'm glad we got you back. What about your thoughts on the significance?
Let me greet my friends. And,
of course.
And fellow writers, good morning, folks.
Good morning, Maya.
Hi, Maya.
I'm Ishmael.
How you doing, Maya?
I'm splendid, thank you. Now, I'm sorry I was cut off just as I was making a brilliant point. And it's gone.
We'll wait for it.
But I was pleased you had asked me what did I think of Senator Clinton's speech last night.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I was pleased. I know her to be a passionate and an honest woman as far as I know. And I've been watching her for 25 years since she was the wife of the governor of Arkansas. And watching and admiring really this northern white woman, Midwestern white woman, come down and not become the governor's wife and throw crochet parties and embroidery tees and things. She actually came to work, and she wasn't trying to raise votes for her husband since he was already governor. She really became interested in the prison system and how the prisoners were being treated and things like that which get earned my admiration. My respect, certainly. When she stepped down, I followed her down off the platform and gave myself to Mr. Obama, Senator Obama, because had I known him first, I would have admired him from the moment I first heard him speak. But I had committed myself to Senator Clinton, and I would not, even at the request of older Democratic heads, ask her to step down.
Mm-hmm.
However, last night when she said, no way, no how, no McCain, I thought, now that's going to be a rallying cry. I think that she is not going to ever have the eloquence of a Southern black preacher. And if you expect that, then you will always be disappointed. I do believe it's going to be a matter of working together with as much earnestness, as much honesty and passion as we can to make this country more than it is today, more than what James Baldwin called these yet-to-be United States. And I agree with Alice. It will take at least fully working together in team to make this globe a better place, a safer place.
What does it mean for this country, Maya Angelou, for African Americans, for all Americans, to have literally an African-American man standing there with that formal nomination and maybe in just a few months the presidency? What does that mean against all the history that we know racially in this country?
Well, I can't say all that it means. It will reveal more than I can even imagine. It will reveal to young white boys in Boston and young black boys in San Francisco and girls, little girls, white and black and Asian and Spanish, all of them. It will reveal who they can be. These people who are 3 years old now, at 6 and 10, we will see something so amazing, which is what happens when courage, not bodaciousness, but real courage, when it leads the team, honesty and courage lead the team, then a sunrise is revealed. So I cannot say. I do know that if we don't do it, we set ourselves back another 35 or 40 years. Mm. I do, or maybe more, but I do know we are on the cusp at this moment, never seen in American history. I mean, you have to imagine that we were the descendants, I am directly the descendant of slaves who were owned chattel in the system of chattel slavery, which meant that when the baby was in the mother's womb, it didn't belong to the mother.
Mm-hmm.
So to come from that to this day where I could hear Biden and the former governor of Virginia and so these white men speaking on behalf of a black man, it's so thrilling. Because at one point I had a poem which ended by saying, this rocky road's not paved for us. I believe in liberals' aid for us when I see a white man load a black man's gun. In this case, here we are seeing it. Sometimes maybe reluctantly, sometimes begrudgingly. But the truth is, people are standing up saying, vote for this man, I'm going to give him my full support.
That is something to see this week, and we're seeing a lot of it. Maya Angelou, Alice Walker, Ishmael Reed with us, and a lot of listeners want to join this conversation. Let me begin to turn to them. Alice is calling from Buffalo, New York. Alice, you're on the air with quite a panel.
Indeed, I feel honored. I feel that if we elect Barack Obama president, we will show the whole world how far this nation has come, and I think we'll all benefit.
Alice, did you think you would live to see this in your lifetime?
No, I'm 92, and I'm hanging in there till election day at least. I have an absentee ballot, and that's about the most I can do.
And where do you intend to...
I'm white, middle class, not without a college education.
Will you vote for Barack Obama, John McCain? What have you? Where are you leaning?
I'm going to vote for Barack Obama, primarily in a way because I think what this will do for the whole the I just think it's the thing to do.
Alice in Buffalo, thank you very much for your call. Let me get one more right here from Nashville, Tennessee. Mark, you're on the air with Maya Angelou, Alice Walker, and Ishmael Reed.
I am absolutely honored to be on the air with you. What I wanted to say was I'm not sure that we'll ever eliminate racism. I'm a white man. I grew up in Kentucky. But while saying that, I think that what this shows is racism can be marginalized. You can make it unimportant to the political process. And I am so happy to see Mr. Obama about to get the nomination, and I think he will win in November. I'll be voting for him.
Mark in Nashville, thank you very much for your call. Ishmael Reed in San Francisco, how about it? Mark is white and Southern and says you can't get entirely over racism, but you can marginalize it. Do you grant that's going on here, Ishmael, or not, possibly?
Well, I think a racist campaign is being conducted against Barack Obama. I think
Mrs. Clinton. What's the evidence?
The Clintons might have set the tone when she said she was, her appeal was to white, hardworking white working class voters. There was like racist innuendo throughout her campaign, and she is providing the McCain campaign with the fodder to take down Obama with her comment that all he had was a speech. He's also has to come up against a media that, in terms of diversity, is about 60 years behind Mississippi. If you go to Mississippi, you'll find black mayors, black elected officials, black professionals in the media. You have a segregated media. You have a convention where Roger Ailes of Fox News is calling the camera shots. The way they did Michelle Obama was a disgrace, and there should be an uproar about it. I think she made one of the best speeches I've ever heard given by a person in a political arena. You have people like Alex Castellanos on CNN telling Obama what he has to do in order to sway white voters. And this is the same Alex Castellanos who designed the ad for Jesse Helms showing the black hand taking jobs away from whites. So he has a real, he's up against it. I think if he's elected, there will be reforms. But if John McCain is elected, a man with 8 houses, and if he chooses Romney, there'll be 12 houses, and they don't know how many houses they own. And if John McCain is elected, they will finish off the white middle class. They'll finish the job that Bush started. And then by 2012, the white middle class will have to choose between putting food on the table and Willie Horton.
Ishmael Reed, we can hear you still got your dukes up and very evidently loud and clear.
Well, I'm just talking about the facts that I read, that I collect, and that I interpret. Now, if you can convince these banks to stop racism, that would be a big victory. The reason that blacks have lost billions of dollars because of this foreclosure scandal is because, though they were qualified for conventional loans, racial redlining of the banks like Wells Fargo, the city of Baltimore is suing Wells Fargo.
Ishmael Reed, we hear it loud and clear. I apologize, but I have to take a short break here. Please hold the thought. Alice Walker, Dr. Maya Angelou, Ishmael Reed, please stand by. We're looking at Barack Obama and what his nomination means for this country's culture. I'm Tom Ashbrook, live from Denver. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, live from Denver in the Democratic National Convention. We're talking on the eve of Barack Obama's formal nomination with African-American writers about the Obama candidacy and its cultural significance for Black America, for all America. We are honored to have with us Dr. Maya Angelou, Alice Walker, Ishmael Reed. Let's go to Fairfield, Iowa, and Joel. Joel, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I came over here to Iowa from Illinois, where I was living, to work for Senator Obama's campaign before the caucuses, and liked what I saw and decided to move back to Iowa. But I think that what Senator Obama shows is, yes, it is post-racial, but also he embodies the heartland values that Michelle Obama enumerated so well in her speech, just very decent, fundamental human values, that the type of thing I was raised with in Iowa, and that I see Senator Obama for, you know, all of his, you know, yes, he's the skinny kid from Chicago. He's got a funny name, but, you know, he can talk to an Iowa farmer on a one-to-one basis on, in a way that I don't think, we'll just say the Republican side cannot do. He has the empathy, the understanding. So I see it as a post-racial success. I've got to add one personal note that I named my own son, his middle name Reed, after Ishmael Reed. And one way of acknowledging the tremendous influence his writing has had on me in seeing, yes, we live in a multicultural world, in the best sense, not the cliched sense of multicultural, but the true sense of multicultural, that there are Irish-American stories, there are Chinese-American stories, there are a lot of stories that have been held down.
Joel, that's a great comment and quite a moment. Your son, with a middle name named after our guest, Ishmael Reed, thank you very much for calling in from Iowa. Ishmael, I want to come to you on that, but first, Alice Walker, if I may, what do you make of the talk of a post-racial society? Is Barack Obama evidence of that? Is he a sign that it's possible? Is that something to dream of? Is it an illusion?
Well, I think we'll have race with us as long as there are, you know, differences in how we look. The challenge is for each of us to end or to start the process of ending racism in ourselves. I think what he shows us is that it's possible to outgrow racism and to outgrow the feeling that somehow if you are a different color, you have to have a certain oppressed demeanor and a way in the world. I like very much his strength in terms of encouraging young people especially that the world is ours. It belongs to all of us. And that is the image, I think, that will help a lot of young people who are struggling with race to grow beyond feeling so downpressed by it.
Maya Angelou, I know we just have you for a couple of more minutes here. Your last thoughts on the significance of this nomination, which will formally be laid before the country tomorrow night, and how our future, racial and otherwise, may be affected by it.
Well, I think that I really hate to see Mr. Obama's campaign and his trial to really make it a better world marginalized through race. Mm-hmm. I agree with the caller from Iowa. The Obama is offering us a chance to be fair. And I don't know if I mean, I know I don't mean just fair racially, mm-hmm. but fair to mm-hmm. the children. Mm-hmm. Fair, not loading them down with a lot of ignorance. And fair in other ways, just in trusting, fair in developing our own selves as courageous people. What he's offering is more than this amalgam of race of white and black, but really a chance to have what the values had talked about in all of the American documents, and certainly from the American pulpits, whether they are Christian or Jewish or Muslim. Mm-hmm. I think that what he's offering us is a chance to be better persons. So that's very important to me. Also, I think that while we can talk about post-racism, and can hope for it and even work for it, the truth is, as long as we have ignorance, we will have racism and sexism and ageism and all the other ignorances will pollute our world and our lives. So to think that one election or even 10 will obliterate elections where black man or woman or Asian woman or man or Spanish speaking, this will obliterate racism. It's ridiculous. What we have to do is continue to work toward it. However, we have to educate, and I don't mean formally educate, but fundamentally educate the children so that they will be free. And that might take 20 generations. Because I agree with Alice Walker, as long as we look differently, as long as this one has more money than the other, as long as we have then we will continue, I'm sorry to say, to be faced with all the ignorances. And I think we work hard to try to achieve post-racism, post-sexism, and all the others. Thank you very much. It was a great delight to hear everybody's ideas and to hear the voices of friends I haven't heard in some time.
Well,
thank
wonderful.
You very much, Tom Ashbrook.
Wonderful to have you.
Bye.
Take care.
Dr. Maya Angelou, author of I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings and A Song Flung Up to Heaven, joining us there from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Let me get a call here from Shifa in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Shifa, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'd like to say this. The test for America, if it's ready for African-American president, would have been if Obama was quote-unquote, your typical black man. I believe that his being biracial really helped him to come to this level. I would also think if Obama was, his father and mother were African-Americans, I would assume that he would have been long time ago discounted as, quote-unquote, another angry black man. Thank you.
Shifa, thank you for your call. Alice Walker, I know we just have you for a couple more minutes. What do you say to this perspective?
I think he's probably right, but the good news is that Obama is who he is, and he has this wonderful parentage, and he's showing us that you don't have to be, you know, upset about it, but you can be very happy about it and see all the gifts that you get from it. And these are the gifts that a multiracial country can benefit from, and we definitely are a multiracial country, and we are more and more mixed as we go along. And so I think he's someone who makes us look at the future of our country with much more assurance because we see, how bad can it be? Look at this great guy.
This can work.
It can work. Now, I have some problems with many things on his you know, program. I'm very much in favor of lifting the embargo against Cuba, for instance. I'm totally anti-war. I think war is incredibly stupid. So those are some of the places where we really will have to work hard to make a difference in how things turn out. But this is, I think, a very optimistic moment for us, and it's one that we must not let slip through our fingers.
Alice Walker, winner of the Pulitzer Prize, famously author of The Color Purple, joining us from Mendocino, California. Alice Walker, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. Bye.
Bye. Let's take a call from Sandy in Malden, Massachusetts. Sandy, you're on the air with Ishmael Reed.
Hello, how are you?
Very well. What do you see, Sandy?
I just wanted to say, electing a black man as a president will not suddenly render America post-racial. I think that because American history continues to be and will always continue to be important, and that history is necessary to remind us about where we've been regarding race relations and how far we've come. So I think a black president doesn't automatically stop the day-to-day practices of racism that happen outside the purview of the White House. Electing Barack Obama is merely a stopgap until we have the opportunity to elect, let's say, a Michelle Obama.
In other words, a woman? Or what do you mean by saying a Michelle Obama?
A black woman.
So it's not enough. But let's say it were Michelle Obama. Would that mean we were in a post-racial society? What's the distinction you're drawing?
No, I'm just saying that electing Barack Obama is just merely a stopgap, that racism and race relations continue to happen even if we have a black man in the White House or a black woman in the White House. So
Sandy,
I don't know. I think the question of post-racial is just a little
too easy. Okay. Yeah, Sandy, thank you very much for that. Ishmael Reed, I mean, there's something, surely even a very tough observer will be something gained here, but it would be Pollyannish to think everything is gained with one election, I suppose. What do you see what's gained and what's not with the nomination itself and if he should win the White House with that step?
Well, I agree with the last caller, Sandy.
Yes.
That this post-race business is a fantasy that was cooked up from Harvard University, and I think Obama is probably a product of that kind of thinking that originates in the African-American Studies Department, where you have Julius Wilson, who wrote a book called The Declining Significance of Race, Henry Louis Gates, who believes that the problems incurred by poor African Americans are self-inflicted, which is Obama's line. He went to the Father's Day speech, made a Father's Day speech, which some observers said was similar to the Sister Soldier thing that President Clinton pulled on Jesse Jackson in order to woo what he called Reagan Democrats. So he went to the Father's Day, that Father's Day speech, and blamed all the misogyny in the world on black men.
Ishmael Reed, you famously, I believe you were the first writer to call Bill Clinton a black president. How do you look back on that now that we may now have a black president?
Well, that was very critical of Bill Clinton because I was traveling the country. The article appeared in the Baltimore Sun. I was traveling the country and I heard that African Americans in different parts of the country, including Hawaii, say that they felt that President Clinton was a soul brother, and I was arguing against that in the article. Now, this is the same president who passed that welfare reform bill that Obama has endorsed and also signed the 1994 omnibus crime bill that sent a lot of thousands of black people to prison with this minimum sentencing requirement. So while African Americans are said to be those who disproportionately take do crack, and whites do powder cocaine, blacks got the long sentences, even though, according to the New York Times, two articles I read, most of the crack addicts are white. Matter of fact, the gentleman, I'm very flattered the gentleman named his kid after me.
Or, his middle name Reed.
His middle name after me. But when he talks about Midwestern values, I'm wondering, does that include amphetamine use?
Because, or meth.
Or meth, yeah, right.
Well, hey, it's a big country and it's got everything going
yeah, right.
on.
But we tend to romanticize, and I think we hear a lot of what I call malarkey in this campaign, and you know, over the top romanticizing, like Jesse Jackson Jr.'s speech where he talked about the mountaintop and comparing that to Martin Luther King's speech and the image of the mountaintop, reaching the mountaintop and seeing the promised land. Well, we're not there yet. We have disparities in health care between blacks and whites, which has been documented by the New England Journal of Medicine. Mm-hmm. But we still have racial profiling. I'm a university professor, and I get racial profiled by the campus police, even though I taught at the university for 35 years.
That's low.
Yeah, that's pretty ironic, huh? And also the human rights abuses in prisons, where most of the prisons are African Americans, even though 70% of the crimes committed in the country, in the rural areas and in the cities, are committed by whites. I guess there's a Bermuda Triangle in the justice system where the charges against white defendants sort of like vanish. But, you know, President Bush went over there and chastised the Chinese about their human rights abuses, but we got plenty of them right here in California.
Ishmael Reed,
we have a long time before we reach the mountaintop.
I hear it. Jeff in Marengo, Iowa. You're on the air with Ishmael Reed.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My comment is that I am from that post-civil rights era generation, and I certainly have respect for that struggle and its historical context and so forth. I was raised in a family with grandparents who used racial epithets and so forth, but I was raised by parents that didn't believe in that kind of thing. And my whole life I've been waiting for our society to catch up with that. But having said that, I guess I'm from a place where I'm kind of like, especially with Senator Obama, that move on. Senator Obama is who he is. I'm a European American, obviously, and I support him for his abilities, for his vision, and for the things that he can do for all of us. And I guess I get this sense that it is terrific to celebrate his racial identity. It's terrific to celebrate that diversity in America. But I feel that we have entrenched structure that says we constantly need to check this. We constantly need to bring the negative up. And I just don't believe that you're ever, ever going to achieve racial parity in our society by force, by negativity, by trying to take that and force that. That comes through education of a new generation.
Jeff, our time is very short. I'm grateful for your call. Ishmael Reed, we've got 30 seconds. Are you, as a black American, heartened by just that kind of observation from Jeff? In brief.
Well, I think if Obama is elected president, it will be a boon for the system. And I think that's the reason that Wall Street is giving him more money than they're giving McCain, because we need this. Incidentally, Obama's mother is Irish, and his ancestor comes out of Ireland during the potato famine. And both Alice Walker and I have Irish ancestry, so he's not the first biracial African-American. There are millions of them.
We are in one great big boat here. Ishmael Reed in San Francisco, author of Mixing It Up, Taking on Media Bullies and Other Reflections. Ishmael Reed, thank you very much for being with
thank
us
you,
this
Tom.
Hour. Our thanks again to Dr. Maya Angelou and Alice Walker, and of course to Ishmael Reed. Thank you for joining us. We're live from Denver. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.